Shirtless. It's the shirtless. We're singing the shirtless. It's the shirtless. The shirtless plantain show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show. This is the Euros edition. Today you have me, Tosin, alongside Dean. How you doing today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It was a great day of football, and we still got dessert later on. I'm very excited for dessert later on. So,
yeah, indeed, indeed, indeed.
Yeah.
Great games.
Let's start off with Belgium and France. We knew that France was going to win, but it didn't play out as like direct as we thought, but the win came eventually. But talk to me about the game.
Honestly, it didn't play out as we thought, in the sense of from a tactical standpoint. I was expecting something different from what we saw, but as far as it being a close game that was going to end 1-0, yeah, that was nailed on. You know, because if you think back to the 2018 World Cup, Umtiti header, France won that one on their way to go win the tournament. Then in the Nations League final, I think Belgium went up 2-0 on them at one point, and Benzema scored one goal, then two more goals came, game ended 3-2. So it feels like that's the pattern of a Belgium-France game. You know, they're kind of rivals, but not really, because most Belgians probably look at Holland, Netherlands as more their rival. But they've played France a lot of times, and they generally just lose to France all the time. It's like Belgian culture at this point. That and King Leopold chopping niggas' hands off and shit. But anyways, the game was really interesting because both managers made some really interesting choices. A couple hours before the game, we had the rumors that Deschamps was going to go to a diamond and play two up top, Thuram and Mbappe, which kind of made sense given how their group stage games really lack fluidity. Even though there were moments where Mbappe created things just because of who he is, but at the end of the day, there wasn't a reliable method of chance creation for France. So it looked like they were going to play the three defensive midfielders, Kante, Tchouameni, and Rabiot, who annoyed the fuck out of us in the group chat, with Griezmann as the 10. But when the game started, that's not what we really saw. You know, Rabiot was on the left. Tchouameni was the deep line playmaker, if you will. Griezmann, for whatever reason, was on the right a lot. He was playing as a right winger, which was just weird. Like, the French folks on the Twitter timeline were going nuts about that. And Kante was sort of like the 10. Then on top of that, as France typically do, they just kind of vacated the midfield, which made it really funny because we didn't get to see that. The commentators here in the States kept talking about how if you looked at the whole field, you would just see like a 40-yard gap in midfield. You know, there were a bunch of players on one end and a bunch of players on the other end, and there was a gap. Because Tedesco, the German for Belgium, selected a team where Onana was the only real traditional midfielder. Yeah. So he was just there, was sort of like almost like a 4-1-4-1, I guess you could call it, with Lukaku as the striker. Openda came in, I guess, for Tielemans. Carrasco came in on the wing, and Doku kept his place. But it was just a really interesting setup for both teams. And I think both coaches just kind of went, Tedesco thought to himself, Deschamps is a terrorist. He's won a lot of things being a terrorist. So I'm just going to terrorize him back. And what that meant was that both teams kind of came into the game with the idea of not making a mistake, vacating the midfield, not allowing any turnovers. And it was weird because you think a game like that would be really boring to watch. But personally, I enjoyed it. What did you think of it?
I had a great time watching this because it was like just so much tactical variance. I mean, obviously the referee had a terrible game. He tried to make himself a superstar, and I was just like, I'm not feeling that. Maybe in the early, maybe he grew into the game. Let me say that. He grew into the game.
Yes.
He grew into the game. Early, he was wilding, but he grew into the game. But the thing that interested me the most was just the fact that Kevin De Bruyne was playing deep most of the game. That was very weird to see. And Darren Fletcher was getting all the quips off today. He did not give a damn. He was going crazy.
I enjoy Darren Fletcher generally, but it's fascinating. Everyone has an opinion about this. Everybody that watches football thinks they're better manager than the managers. But I just kept thinking to myself, like, why are you whining so much about Kevin De Bruyne not playing the way you always watch him play when the manager whose job is on the line has decided that we're going to do something different today? Like, for me, I sort of got the logic of it. It didn't work, but it didn't not work. Yeah. Because at halftime, both managers would have been happy. Well, 0-0, so nobody had scored. There weren't a lot of great chances created either. You know, just some shots from distance. A lot of good shooting from Tchouaméni. I'll give him credit. But ultimately, I think what he was trying to do was basically put a bunch of pace in his front line and have the ball get to De Bruyne as quickly as possible so he could find runners.
Yeah.
But that's not what actually happened in practice, because it kind of looked like the Belgian players were almost playing under instructions to avoid Kevin De Bruyne. It was really strange. So in practice, it didn't really work, if that's what he was planning to do. I didn't get a chance to watch his press conference or anything. I have an actual job.
Yeah.
But in reality, I didn't think it was a terrible thing, because at the end of the day, it's a knockout game. And all these managers that have won knockout games before will basically tell you the means justify the ends, or the ends justify the means, or whatever the fuck it is. You know. So you're not going to tell Deschamps that playing a defensive midfielder as your left winger behind Mbappe is a bad thing. He won a World Cup doing that shit. You know, he got to another final doing that shit. Yeah. So
yeah,
I thought it was strange, but I thought Darren Fletcher and I think it was Owen Hargreaves.
Owen Hargreaves. Yeah.
It was like, can you guys protest a little less? Like, can we enjoy the game? Can you talk about what we're watching as opposed to what you want to see?
Yeah.
You know, so I found that a little frustrating. But
I'm going to skip ahead. My man in the match is William Saliba. Okay. Like, I know Arsenal fans know this. Like, y'all know how great he is. Like, you guys see him week in the week out. And I see him as well. I watch a lot of Premier League as well. That is a fantastic. And I watched Ligue 1 as well. He was great in Ligue 1. That's a fantastic football player. He put Romelu Lukaku in a holding cell for 90 minutes. There's a point where Lukaku switched over to Upamecano because he couldn't handle that shit no more. It was like every header, every turn, Saliba was right there. And I almost felt bad for him. That was the first time I could genuinely say, I was like, I feel bad for you because you're trying. And like, he wasn't not trying. He was legit. He couldn't outmuscle him. He couldn't outpace him. He couldn't do anything to Saliba. And Saliba Lido is looking like your food. And you know what? You know what Saliba did today that made me that I say? That's France's center back for the next 10 years. You got to find him a partner. That's all I can say. That's France's number one right there. That's your number one center back.
Pretty much. I almost get the sense that it doesn't even really matter who his partner is. Like, he's that good.
Yeah.
Because keep in mind, he's playing on the left side of France's defense. He doesn't play there for Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
The last time he played on the left side of a defense for a club team was for Marseille. And that was in a back three. So this is something he shouldn't, in theory, shouldn't be good at. And he's just kind of doing it nonchalantly. Like Lukaku, I felt kind of sorry for him until I realized that it took him an hour to realize that, I'll have better luck if I try Upamecano instead of Saliba. It took him an hour to figure that shit out. And literally the first time he went at Upamecano, he got his only shot on goal in the game that Mayan saved. And you're right to highlight Saliba. I mean, Jules Koundé, who was also very good, played really well. But my man of the match was Saliba. Koundé was the official man of the match, but my man of the match was Saliba. It was just kind of, in a way, it's weird because, again, I've been watching him for quite a while. I think of him as the best defender on the planet. I felt that way for over a season at this point. And it was really nice to see the larger populace see what I watch every week. Like, it's so matter of fact for him. It's so nonchalant. It's just like, this is what I do, man. Like, and honestly, I wonder if he sweats. I'm still not sure that dude actually sweats physically. Like, he's incredible. That not only that, the defending was immaculate. Then later on in the game, he was in Belgium's box destroying Doku in a one-on-one and trying to get a shot on goal. If that had gone in, this whole podcast SPS shit would have ended. I'd be like, you know what? We can't top this moment, my nigga. We just watch a center back. I'll do Baresi. I'll do Maldini. I'll do Beckenbauer at the Euros. Yeah. Incredible.
You know who else was great too for France? Theo Hernandez. But we've known that Theo Hernandez is the best left back in the world because we watch a lot of Serie A. Because again, we watch too much football. That's what we do in the SPS. We watch too much football. And Theo Hernandez is immaculate. That slide tackle he did, you know exactly slide tackle. I was like,
On Carrasco, that chance actually came about because that was literally the first moment in the game where De Bruyne went from playing deep to playing a little further up. He just moved like 20 yards up, and the first thing he did was create a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, your boy Hernandez was like, "Nah, we good. Like that's not going down here today." You
know? Adrian Rabiot suspended for the next game, and I think that's a blessing for France because Camavinga needs to come in the field. I am so tired of.
You think it's Camavinga?
It has to be Camavinga. Who else are they going to put there?
I mean, they have options.
They do, but it has to be Camavinga.
They could put Zaire Emery there. I wouldn't mind that. you wouldn't mind that. You know, we like that. We like that kid. He plays. He's a really good player, but it has to be Camavinga. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Mbappe didn't really play too well. I mean, there was moments where he showed that like he was good. Let me take that back. He did decent. He did decent. But there was moments where he showed like, yeah, I'm that guy. There was a step over he did, right? And Owen Hargreaves said this. Owen Hargreaves, basically, I'm going to sum up what Owen Hargreaves said. He said, I've been watching a lot of football my whole entire life. The only player that I know that can do step-overs that quick is R9. And I think that was the biggest compliment you could pay to Mbappe because he did some step-overs where I'm just like, ooh.
Yeah, I thought all that was missing from him today was the finish.
Yeah.
I think he was as good as you can expect a player to be in a game like this that's so tense with very few chances. With better shooting, he scores a hat trick today. But he has a bit of a shit luck thing going in this tournament because, you know, his role model was a guy that has now taken more shots in this competition than Scotland without scoring a goal. So maybe if he switches role models during this tournament, he might actually score a fucking goal or something.
But yeah.
I wouldn't say it was incredible, but I thought he had a good performance. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, we do judge strikers on scoring goals, and he didn't score, so fair enough.
Another strike we have to judge, Marcus Thuram was not good today. We've seen a lot of him at Inter, and like I was not impressed with him. I'm sure his dad saw him. His dad was pissed. Like, don't wear my number, bro.
Yeah, I don't want to be harsh on him. I just feel as if he could have done better with the chances he had. He had two headers, one header in the first half, one header in the second half. One of them was a beautiful cross from Koundé. The other was not as good a cross, but it was a cross nonetheless. And mm-hmm. I think him in better form or a better forward really would convert those. I think Giroud probably converts those if he gets those opportunities today. Or he misses them and just looks handsome in slow motion and we pretend it was okay. Yeah, he came off for Kolo Muani, and that was probably the important moment of the game, the most important moment of the game, because Randall Kolo Muani went on to, or as our friend, the meat master, called him, Rwanda, Congo, Malawi.
I don't know what it is about Randall Kolo Muani, but he looks like he has a secret he wants to tell you. He always looks like he has something he wants to tell you. Like he has that coy smile on him.
Well, here's the secret. The secret is that he bribed Vertonghen to score that own goal. Man, that's a sad way to go out. Like, you can't even. I think if I happen to be a Belgium fan, I'd almost want to have someone or something to blame for this loss. But you really can't be too. You can be sad, but you can't be mad at losing on a deflected own goal. You know, and shout out own goal, dominating this tournament, just best striker in the world right now. Own goal. Then Mbappe, then Lukaku. Because, yeah, that was just unfortunate. I thought Castells was good in the game. Mayan was good in the game. Neither one of them had much to do. But
Mayan, by the way, is a weirdie. I don't know what he did with that kick save. I was like, bro, you know you can use the hands, right?
Well, here's the thing about that. People often act as if there's one preferred technique to do these things. And I'm just like, I didn't think that was a dangerous cross. Yeah. That's one of those crosses where you just put it on goal and any deflection, it goes in. So he had to wait until the very last second to commit to what he was going to do. And by the time he was able to commit, all he had to put on it was his foot.
Yeah.
And he made the save. And that's all that really matters. You know, like, shout out Magic Mac, man. He's been good in this tournament.
He has been. He's restoring.
He has had a lot to do, though. I'll admit that much, because he has Saliba in front of him and Upamecano, who we have to give credit to today, because I was so sure Upamecano was going to give a penalty away today.
Yeah.
And he didn't. So shout out to him.
You know, there's a player on Belgium. We have to praise Belgium. Jeremy Doku was aggressively violent today.
He was aggressively Ghanaian today. That's what he was. He was just marching, man. Just full banku the whole game. Unfortunately, it didn't really come out to anything. But I thought he was good. I thought KDB was good when he actually got the ball.
For sure.
Again, I know both of us have a bias against Amadou Onana.
He was great.
Well, I'm glad you think that, because I just don't remember much.
No, he was good. I'm sorry. He was good.
I think by default, when you're the one traditional midfielder that's playing against a midfield of the midfield that France put out today, and no one can say that your midfield got overrun, then by default, you did play well. But I didn't really see anything that made me think I really want this player at my club.
Fair enough.
And that's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm just saying at the club I support, I don't know that that's what I want. But that's not why we're here. Belgium, from your perspective, is there any like big criticism for how they've navigated this tournament now that they're going home?
Not really. I mean, just couldn't put away chances. I mean, like, we've all known that their golden generation was really pyrite in hindsight. They had a lot of good big names, Hazard, you know, KDB, Lukaku when he was fit, Fellaini, Tielemans, Axel Witsel when he could run around, Vertonghen. But it just really was like just that, and there was no really like depth to it, right? There wasn't really any like quality players. I mean, I remember one point they called him Lukaku's brother. That's how I know like how bad they were, like as far as depth was, because I don't know where Jordan Lukaku is today. I couldn't tell you. I don't even think Romelu knows where Jordan is today.
It's not his fault. He went to Lazio at some point, and I was like, that's not a good move for a black man's career. So, I never heard about him after that. As far as I know, he's like in the ground with Mussolini.
Yeah, but there's really nothing I could say about them that like is going to do them justice. They just, you know. Oh, he's in Turkey, by the way. He's in Adanaspor. So okay. That's where he is.
That's,
yeah,
that's a good place for a player of that talent level.
Yeah. So nothing really you can take away. I mean, they do need a striker. I mean, Luis Openda showed like, you know, why he was dangerous. He didn't really get a chance on goal, but he's shown like, you know, flashes here and there.
It was mainly from his pressing, which is what you would expect from someone that's played at Red Bull for a while. Like they tend to be really good at pressing. And he surprised some of the French defenders, deep midfielders at points, but that's not why they pay you, my brother. You got to get some shots on goal, you know, and that didn't really happen today.
Yeah, so there's really nothing I could take away from Belgium. I mean, you're going home and you lost to a team that you usually used to lose to. So, unfortunate. But, hey, there's a lot of refreshing doing that squad, and we'll see what they do next round. But the other game of the day, Portugal and Slovenia. I want you to just take it away. I have nothing to – this is your time. Go ahead.
I don't know. That's your boy, though. That's your boy. You're the one that supported a club with your boy, you know, like because this was.
Can I interject quickly?
Go on, please.
In 2008, he said he felt like a slave, right? I'll never forget that. It was 08, 09. He was dead to me after that. Well, I had to lie. Like, after that, like, I swear to you, I don't care how good he was at Madrid. I don't care how good he was, whatever. Once he said I felt like a slave, I was like, oh, okay. Abajo. Mafia Sile. No, I'm leaving you alone because I have nothing to do with you. So, since I was a teenager, I've not really rocked with him, so I don't really care.
Listen, man. Okay, fine. I'll let you have that. But I forgot how much fun it is to watch a game with Homelando and watch him frustrated and fucking up all game because this man has hijacked the democratic process in Portugal and forced everybody to serve him. Like, Portugal, I really feel like Portugal could have made much easier work of this game if he didn't start. Because everything is engineered to set chances up for him. And honestly, he was just always like a yard short, just not there quickly enough. And that bleeds into the rest of the team. And there was just, it just didn't flow today. It didn't flow today. They have too much talent to play the way they played. And credit to Slovenia. I mean, they are very well drilled. I think in these tournaments, so it's a bit like, you know, being a fan of a big team in a league like the Premier League as an Arsenal fan. I've heard a lot of managers like Alan Pardew and Tony Pulis and, you know, Sam Allardyce get credit for, in my opinion, not doing all that much. Because the hardest thing to do in this sport, which is why people like Pep say they don't even coach it, is to score goals. You know, I'll get you to the final third, and after that, it's up to you. And I forget where I was going with this point. But Portugal just didn't. For all the possession they had, I think they only had 6 shots on target in this game. And I don't really remember Oblak making like a crazy save at any point. Who, by the way, you know, if Slovenia had done it, he would clearly be man of the match for them. But they worked really hard. They stayed in their block. And Portugal just could not really break them down. And a lot of that was because of the lack of fluidity that comes from having a pensioner as your striker.
One of the most
honestly, this was to me, there were no goals in this game. There were no open play goals in this game. But to me, this was maybe one of the more entertaining games in the entire tournament because it was like watching a comedy, like just watching Cristiano get more and more frustrated throughout the game. At some point, I think the commentator said he had taken more shots than the entirety of Scotland in this tournament. Like one man took more shots than an entire country and still hasn't scored from open play in this tournament. Then we went to extra time because we might as well skip ahead because, I don't remember any big, great chances for Portugal. And this man gets the softest penalty thanks to it was a good run by Diogo Jota, but I thought it was a really soft penalty. What'd you make of it?
Super soft.
Yeah, I in my ideal world, it doesn't get called, but I see why they called it. I see why it stood. And before I could even tweet some hater shit, Homelander had missed it. And this nigga starts crying during the break for extra time, man.
So dramatic. Man. And you see Diogo Dalo playing with his nipples on the sideline.
Whoa. I ain't see none of that.
Yeah. He was playing with his chest. I was like, yo, chill.
Yeah, I ain't see that. But yeah, like it was just hilarious. At the end of the day, I suppose all the credit has to go to Diogo Costa, is it now?
Yes. And the thing is, Benjamin Sesko, I can see exactly why you're staying at Leipzig. That was one of the most frustrating things. Listen, we come from an era of gunmen strikers, okay? Mark Viduka, what's his name? Gabriel Batistuta, Hernan Crespo. We come with Shevchenko, R9. We come with Samuel Eto'o. We come from a generation where strikers like that, 1v1 versus the goalkeeper, not only going to make the goalkeeper like work, Ruven Nistelrooy, they're going to make you realize this net is getting torn off, okay? I'm going to rip this net. And that shot he did, just it pissed me off so much. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be this mad.
Honestly, I was even more annoyed by that because prior to that, you know, because both of those, he had two opportunities from Pepe errors. You know, so Pepe, he was 41 when this game started. When the game ended, he was 50.
Yes. Because
the football left him in this game. You know, like the football left him in this game. He made some bad errors. That probably should have cost Portugal. I keep wanting to say Portland. I don't know why. That should have cost Portugal. But Sesko, as you said, was right to sign up to stay at RB Leipzig because in one instance, he needed to get his body in front of Pepe. You've outpaced him. You have control of the ball. Just get in front of him. From that point on, if he touches you again, it's a penalty and he's off. And lacking that, just get the shot on goal. He scuffs it. And the second opportunity, the one that really pissed you off, oh, man, that was frustrating. Because, you know, the most interesting quality about Sesko as a player, because I scouted him pretty heavily when Arsenal was linked to him, and actually prior to that, I've known about him for quite a while, is his ball striking. The kid can, I mean, even in this tournament, we've seen him hit the bar a couple times with just crazy shots. And you get one-on-one, and you want to turn into a finesse striker. What's going on, man? He could have done something really great today if he had just put his foot through the fucking ball.
You're not Thierry Henry. You're not going to know. That's not your game. Put the ball through.
At least.
Yeah. But Diogo Costa, this is not the first time he's done this with penalties, okay? I know that some people looking at him like this might be the first time I've seen. Look, Diogo Costa since 2020, that guy has been saving people's. Like, I remember there was a Champions League game where he used to have like three saves in the game. Three penalties. Yeah. Yeah. The guy's absurd, okay? He's really, really good with penalties. And Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't know that he's worth the price that Porto have put on him for the last couple seasons.
No.
Probably is. Maybe, maybe not. Like 80 million they want for him, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
But he's definitely, he was linked to United pretty heavily after David De Gea left. That would have been a good pickup, I thought. But, you know, shout out Black Man.
Yeah, I mean, I love Bart Simpson in goal. I don't care what none of y'all say. I love my Black Cameroonian in goal.
You said Black Simpson.
Yeah, I love my Bart Simpson in goal, okay? I love him. 40 years old with a high top fade. I don't give a damn. Love my keeper. But no, Diogo Costa, man, he really came up big in the penalties, man. Saving three of those penalties that's some video game shit. Because it was just like, just boom, 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 game over.
It's fascinating. Shout out to Homelander for actually stepping up as a captain to take the first penalty. We all, what was it, Euro? Which Euro was it where he wanted to wait until the fifth penalty?
2020, probably.
And he didn't even get on the field.
No,
it would have been before that. Like,
so 2012?
Like maybe even 8. You know, he's been around for way too long. He needs to go, man. Like, let the youth prosper, I beg.
04, 08, 12, 16, 20, 2024. 6 of them things. Bro, and I'm going to go back to your point about him and the way Portugal play, right? I've seen a lot of people in the timeline talk crazy about Rafael. I'm saying this right now. Most of you do not watch Serie A. I know you're not watching Monza versus Milan. I know you're not watching Milan versus Venezia. Or you're not watching Milan versus... you know, Sassuolo. I know you're not, because only sickos like myself watch games like that. That's a very, 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 very talented player, Rafael Leão. And I think that a lot of these players now have like their best talents, their best skills are like, it's kind of like taken away because they're having to do things that like, it's just not conducive for them, right?
Yeah, you got a guy that's monopolizing the patterns of play. Like everything is kind of designed like Rafael Leão he starts his dribbles knowing that what's expected at the end of the dribble is for him to cross it to Cristiano. as opposed to him doing what organically comes to him in the moment, you know, which kind of differs from, you know, to go back to the prior game. On one level, I was like, yo, if KDB is deep, y'all should be giving him the ball and build up more often instead of bypassing him. But they were actually bypassing him to do positive shit.
Yeah.
Portugal, they do positive shit, then fuck it up because they want to give it to one guy. And the opponent knows that. You know that. We know that. You know, so at the end of the day, good players end up looking a little annoyed.
Do you know who else doesn't know that though? Cristiano Ronaldo stands. Oh my days, fam. Listen, every little bit of criticism about him, they take it personally, like if you insulted their mother. And is I need you guys to calm down and relax,
no,
okay?
No. Don't they should not calm down. Let them continue to do with it. Me, I enjoy it. I like when they act like idiots because they have parasocial relationships with a man that doesn't give a fuck about them. Like, I totally get being inspired by his career and all that shit. Like, a lot of the players I'm a big fan. I mean, Mbappe, we just mentioned him. That's his guy. Bukayo Saka is my guy. Cristiano is his guy. You know, so listen, I get it. But it's not going to change the truth. Florentino Perez doesn't get rid of good players, okay? When Real Madrid sold him, they were telling the world something. And you see how his career has gone since then. You can't argue with all of Europe, okay? The motherfucker plays in Saudi Arabia.
For
He's
a reason.
He's not that good anymore, okay? He's not that good. A hat trick against Luxembourg doesn't make him good. But if you don't want to accept it, that's on to you. The rest of us are living in reality here.
Because when he came to United for that second time, I was so frustrated from match goal one. It was so annoying because
I was so happy.
Because the same thing that's happened to Portugal now is happening to the same is what happened to Man United. And when I called it out, people were like, "Oh, you're just hating." No, I'm not hating. Because guess what? If I was really hating, I would have said some shit that Saliba's not that good. But guess what? Saliba is the only center back I've seen since Rio retired that reminds me of Rio at his peak. And that is something I can go to the bank saying that is a legit Rolls-Royce center back.
Oh, no, man. Saliba don't be missing no drug test, but you know.
Hey, listen.
Hey, listen. I'm just saying.
Leave my 6'4" ballerina Peckham guy alone, okay? Let him be.
Nah, man. He has the intellect of a doorknob. I can't stand that motherfucker. Like, why is every United player that became a pundit so fucking stupid? Like, what's that about, man? Like, Michael Carrick is probably the smartest of them, but he's too smart to actually go on TV. So
he's a coach. Yeah. You know, it's a perfect example of that. Patrice Evra. I love him to death, but my God, Patrice Evra.
I love this game, man. I'm kind of scared to see what happens when Cristiano meets William Saliba. I mean, he scored against him once, I think, at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not going to happen this time. Because Sultan Saliba doesn't go for that loser Saudi shit, okay? Like, the Maybach will be Maybacking. It's going to be awesome, man.
Yeah,
like,
that's...
He's going to retire that old man, and it will be good for everybody. Especially Cristiano stands. Like, they need help. They need help. And Saliba will help them when he puts that dog out. He's going to take him to back and put him out like old Yeller. It's going to be
old Yeller shit. Oh, but yeah, tomorrow we got Netherlands versus Romania. I think Netherlands should beat them.
I got money on Romania, man.
Hey, listen.
I just don't. This is not our Holland.
Yeah.
We don't know these guys. You know, if Frankie was around, maybe. If Koop Miners was around, maybe. But even then, this is not our Holland.
Yeah. And then we also have Austria versus Turkey, which I think might be the best game in a round of 16. I think that these two teams don't give a damn.
Bro, I bought drugs for that specific game. Just for that game. It's going to be so good. There's no way that game is not going to be fantastic. And I'm pretty confident that Austria will win. Because Turkey cannot defend for shit.
And Austria can. They got David Alaba as a coach. They got Yerba Juju on the sideline.
And they got the Ballon d'Or winner in my book, Marcel Sabitzer. Like, you laughing, but I'm dead ass about this shit. It's Saliba, then it's Sabitzer. That's where I'm at with it, man.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Euros edition. Tonight, we got Copa America. By the time you guys hear this, you would have probably a bunch of sad USA fans. I'm going to quickly add this for tomorrow for everybody can hear this. More than likely, Uruguay is not going to change their team, right? I want to tell you guys something. I've seen Marcelo Bielsa for a very long time. He coached against Nigeria in 2002 World Cup. I remember that. He coached against United. This guy's nickname is El Loco, okay? Which means, for those of you who don't know Spanish, crazy. He does this thing called murder ball. Do you really think somebody like that is going to switch their team up? he's a madman, okay? And listen, I'm excited for this game. I'm sorry that we have to distract away from the Euros and go into Copa America. I'm very excited for this shit. Like, yeah, I am about to drink a Red Bull right now.
I just have this sense that the boys are going to step up for Greg. I can't explain it. There's no logic behind this. I just feel like they're going to step up. But yeah, looking forward to tomorrow's Euro games. Holland are going to embarrass us. I just know it in my bones. I just know it, and it's going to be bad, and Ronald Koeman's going to get fired, and I'm going to crack Tintin jokes. You know, I've seen the future.
It's yeah. Insane. Ladies and gentlemen, listen, from me, myself, Tosin, we want you guys to like, comment, subscribe on YouTube. Like all the videos on TikTok, like all the videos on Instagram. Support us on Twitter. Listen, this has been an amazing tournament. I've really enjoyed Copa. I've really enjoyed Euros. From me and Dean, we're out. Dean, you got anything else you want to add quickly?
Nope.
Peace.
All right, everybody. Peace.
We're singing the shirtless. It's the shirtless. The shirtless plenty show.